His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Nitaya Go Premanande Hari Hari Bo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. All glories be a sum of the virtues. All glories be a sum of the virtues. All glories be a sum of the virtues. All glories be Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart, text number 5.
Chirani kim patina santi dishanti bhiksham. Naivangri papara brita sarito pyashushyan. Rudha guha kimajito vatino pasannan. Kasmad bhajanti kavayo dhanadur madhandhan. Chirani kim patina santi dishanti bhiksham. Naivangri papara brita sadito pyashushyan. Rudha guha kimajito vatino pasannam. Kasmad bhajanti kavayo dhana dhurma dandhan. Chirani kim patina santi dishanti bhiksham. Naivangri papara brita sadito pyashushyan. Rudha guha kimajito vatino pasannam. Kasmad bhajanti kavayo dhana dhurma dhandhan. Thank you.
Paravrita Sarita Prasistam. Yodha Duha Kinajito Vatino Prasamman. Asmai Bhajanti Kavayo Dhamma Guru Radha. Word meanings, Chirani, torn clothes, Kim, weather, Pati, on the road, Na, not, Santi, there is, Dishanti, give in charity, Bhiksham, alms, Na, not, Eva, also, Angripaha, the trees, Parabrita, one who maintains others, Sarita, the rivers, Api also, Ashishan, have dried up, Ruda, clothes, Guha, caves. Kim, weather, Ajita, the Almighty Lord, Avati, give protection. Na, not, Upasannan, the surrendered soul. Kasmat, what for then? Bhajanti, flatters, Kavaya, the learned, Dhana, wealth, Dormada Andhan, too intoxicated by. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Are there no torn clothes lying on the common road? Do the trees which exist for maintaining others no longer give alms and charity? Do the rivers being dried up no longer supply water to the thirsty? Are the caves of the mountains now closed? Or above all, does the Almighty Lord not protect the fully surrendered souls? Why then do the learned sages go to flatter those who are intoxicated by hard-earned wealth? Report. The renounced order of life is never meant for begging or living at the cost of others as a parasite. According to the dictionary, a parasite is a sycophant who lives at the cost of society, without making any contribution to that society. The renounced order is meant for contributing something substantial to society and not depending on the earnings of the householders. On the contrary, acceptance of alms from the householders by the bona fide mendicant is an opportunity afforded by the saint for the tangible benefit of the donor. In the Sanatana Dharma institution, almsgiving to the mendicant is part of a householder's duty, and it is advised in the scriptures that the householder should treat the mendicants as their family children and should provide them with food, clothing, etc., without being asked. Pseudo-mendicants, therefore, should not take advantage of the charitable disposition of the faithful householders. The first duty of a person in the renounced order of life is to contribute some literary work for the benefit of the human being in order to give him realized direction towards self-realization. Amongst the other duties in the renounced order of life of Srila Sanatana, Srila Rupa, and the other Goswamis of Vrindavan, the foremost duty discharged by them was to hold learned discourses amongst themselves at Sevakunj, Vrindavan, the spot where Sri Radha Damodar Temple was established by Srila Jiva Goswami, and where the actual samadhi tombs of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Jiva Goswami are laid. For the benefit of all in human society, they left behind them immense literatures of transcendental importance. Similarly, all the acharyas who voluntarily accepted the renounced order of life aimed at benefiting human society and not at living a comfortable or irresponsible life at the cost of others. However, those who cannot give any contribution should not go to the householders for food, for such mendicants asking bread from the householder are an insult to the highest order. Shukadeva Goswami gave this warning especially for those mendicants who adopt this line of profession to solve their economic problems. Such mendicants are in abundance in the age of Kali. When a man becomes a mendicant willfully or by circumstances, he must be of firm faith and conviction that the Supreme Lord is the maintainer of all living beings everywhere in the universe. Why then would he neglect the maintenance of a surrendered soul who is 100% engaged in the service of the Lord? A common master looks to the necessities of his servant. So how much more would the all-powerful, all-opulent Supreme Lord look after the necessities, the life of a fully surrendered soul? The general rule is that a mendicant devotee will accept a simple, small loincloth without asking anyone to give it in charity. He simply salvages it from the rejected torn cloth thrown in the street. When he is hungry, he may go to a magnanimous tree which drops fruit. And when he is thirsty, he may drink water from the flowing river. He does not require to live in a comfortable house, but should find a cave in the hills and not be afraid of jungle animals, keeping faith in God who lives in everyone's heart. The Lord may dictate to tigers and other jungle animals not to disturb his devotee. Haridas Thakur, a great devotee of Lord Sri Chaitanya, used to live in such a cave, and by chance a great venomous snake was a co-partner of the cave. Some admirer of Thakur Haridas, who had to visit the Thakur every day, feared the snake and suggested that the Thakur leave that place. Because his devotees were afraid of the snake and they were regularly visiting the cave, Thakur Haridas agreed to the proposal on their account. But as soon as this was settled, the snake actually crawled out of its hole in the cave and left the cave for good before everyone present. By the dictation of the Lord, who lived also within the heart of the snake gave preference to Haridas and decided to leave the place and not disturb him. So this is a tangible example of how the Lord gives protection to a bona fide devotee like Haridas Thakur. According to the regulations of the Sanatana Dharma Institution, one is trained from the beginning to depend fully on the protection of the Lord in all circumstances. The path of renunciation is recommended for acceptance by one who is fully accomplished and fully purified in his existence. This stage is described also in the Bhagavad Gita 16.5 as Daivi Sampat. A human being is required to accumulate Daivi Sampat, or spiritual assets. Otherwise, the next alternative, Asuri Sampat, or material assets, will overcome him disproportionately. And thus one will be forced into the entanglement of different miseries of the material world. A sannyasi should always live alone without company, and he must be fearless. He should never be afraid of living alone, although he is never alone. The Lord is residing in everyone's heart, and unless one is purified by the prescribed process, one will feel that he is alone. But a man in the renounced order of life must be purified by the process. Thus he will feel the presence of the Lord everywhere and will have nothing to fear, such as being without any company. Everyone can become a fearless and honest person if his very existence is purified by discharging the prescribed duty for each and every order of life. One can become fixed in one's prescribed duty by faithful oral reception of Vedic instructions and assimilation of the essence of Vedic knowledge by devotional service to the Lord. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurim militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Yukadeva Goswami, of course, is speaking to Maharaj Parikshit. But he's not only speaking to him. Of course, there's a large audience there listening in. So when he speaks to him, he has this other audience in mind. Sometimes the acharyas point out how Sukadev Goswami is saying things for others' benefit, especially because there's a whole mix of people there. They're not all bhaktas necessarily. You have karmis there, you have gyanis, you have yogis. So sometimes he raises different points for different kinds of people. The Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this section, he kind of summarizes these first few verses. He summarizes what's going on here, why Sukadev Goswami is speaking like this. In the beginning of this, of course, as Sukadev began speaking, pretty much got right to the point in the first chapter, where he said we should hear about, worship, and glorify the Lord, and chant Hare Krishna. Basically, this is what one should do at the end of life. But then he said, actually, one should not be afraid of death, and one should just go away, leave everything, just leave everything. Of course, traditionally that would mean going to some holy place or going to the Himalayas, living alone, and sit down and practice meditation. So this was his suggestion, what one should do when one sees that death is approaching. So his prescription there was that one sit down and meditate as the traditional kind of meditation is to meditate on the Supersoul. But he understood that some may think, well, that's too hard. How can we do that? Just sit down. You're so used to living in the outside world and perceiving everything on the outside. To just go and sit down someplace and try to focus on the Supersoul in the heart is very difficult. So that Sukadev Goswami, he switched a little bit. And he said, understanding this, that this thought might be there, said, well, you can meditate on the outside. You don't have to go within. You can actually go without. You do that by meditating on the Virat Rupa. Your senses are already going out, so that's okay. You can still look at the world, but look at it in a different way. Shift your vision, and you'll become purified by that. So the end of the last chapter, like the last third or so of the last chapter, was about the specifics, about how you actually do that. What you think about, how you see this world as a form of God. You think of it as God, actually. So then Sukadev Goswami begins this chapter by mentioning Lord Brahma. He said Lord Brahma was able to do his work because of meditation. So Vishwanath Chakravarti makes the point. So now he's showing, he said, what I was just telling you about, it actually works. It worked for Brahma. Brahma meditated on the Virat Rupa, and that's why he was empowered to create this universe, to do that service to the Lord. So then he's thinking about, he said, the people may still have some objections to this. Some people will think that, especially in the audience, there are different philosophers. So some may think, actually, the goal of life at the end of your life, you want to go to heaven. Everybody wants to go to heaven, obviously. And that's the way many philosophers would think traditionally, because the Vedic literature is full of this. Most of it, a large percentage of the Vedas are about going to heaven. Everybody is thinking, I want to go to heaven. So the karmis will think, no, you don't meditate. You need to perform your punya. You have to keep doing your karmic activities to make sure you secure your place in heaven. So then there was this verse that says, don't get distracted by that. Sukadev Goswami says, he said, this is just like a dream world. Don't get carried away by that. Don't get distracted by that. Forget about that. Don't listen to those people who are telling you that human life is meant for karmic activities, because it's temporary and you'll never be satisfied there. So then he says, just live simply and perform this meditation, as I was suggesting. So that's what the context of these verses here, yesterday's verse and today's verse. It's like you can get everything you want. You can just live very, very simply. The earth will provide for all your needs. Don't be greedy to get more. Just live simply and chant Hare Krishna. Live simply and be a devotee. You just don't need very much. Today, some of the things were mentioned. You can get your food, you can get your water, you can get your clothes, all these things you can get. At least you used to be able to. If you're like me when you were reading this, you were thinking, well, maybe not today. It's not like some of the things that are there no torn clothes lying on the road? Well, that you can get. I know because I walk a lot and I find clothes all over the place. I think, how are these clothes getting here? People throw them out their windows of their cars. And there are places where you can get free clothes, too, you know? Different charities. Do the trees no longer give their fruit? Well, they don't really, pretty much. Of course, if they do, they're on private property, so you can't get them anyway. So that's a little harder to do. Are the rivers dried up? Well, they're not dried up, but they're all polluted. Even though they look nice, sometimes when I walk in the woods and I see streams and they look really, of course, sometimes they're black. You're like, I don't know, what is that? You know, it has this tannin in there, tannic acid or something, it makes them black. But even when they're not, you think, well, all the crops are being fertilized with poisons, you know, so everything is poison. So what happens when it rains? All that stuff ends up in the rivers. So it's probably not very safe to drink straight from a river, you know, these days. You can find a spring, that'll be okay, but generally not the rivers. Are the caves now closed in the mountains? We're not finding too many caves in Florida. Maybe up in the panhandle. I just looked it up. The highest, because usually caves are in mountains, right? The highest point in Florida is like 325 feet or 350 feet, something like that. So it's pretty flat, not too many caves. Maybe there, I don't know, you know, we hear about Jiva Goswami when he was rejected by Sanatan Goswami, he went into a crocodile hole, kind of like a cave. So I don't know if we have those in Florida, maybe, but I don't know if I'd want to crawl into one of those, sit down and chant japa. That might be a little scary. We'll talk more about fear, because that's what's mentioned here. So the cave, even that idea, I thought, living in a cave, boy, that doesn't sound very nice, really. They're dark, for one thing. This raised a thought in my mind. How did people make fire? Does anybody know, before we had matches, how people made fires? Even, you know, a few hundred, 500 years ago? How did people start fire? I mean, I'm sure they did. Maybe there was a forest fire and they just kept, well, you know, they kept an eternal flame in their house so they could... They banged rocks together. I mean, I'm sure there are different ways of doing it, but... But you're living in a cave, it's dark in there, so you have to have a fire in there. Of course, it's a shelter. I was thinking, if I lived in a cave, I think I'd probably spend a lot of time outside. Go in there to sleep. But then this idea that comes up, you think, well, probably mentions tigers. He said you shouldn't be afraid, maybe tigers will come or snare. So many things. A human being will take shelter of a cave, but so will animals. Don't bears hibernate in caves? So that's why it says here, you have to think, well, it's up to Krishna. I'm doing my duty here. I'm supposed to do this as a sannyasi. And so if a snake comes or a bear comes or a tiger, that means Krishna sent them. Krishna's in the heart of that living entity. I know I think like this myself, and sometimes when I walk, I might walk through a field or something. When I was living at BTG, I used to cut through that field all the time, and I didn't know what I was going to come across. It was pitch dark sometimes. And I just thought, well, I guess if Krishna wants a snake to get me, a snake will get me. What can I do about it? You know? So that's the idea here, is that the sannyasi is supposed to actually have this fearlessness, this courage. Sannyasi is supposed to have this courage. He's never alone, Prabhupada says here. I remember I knew a sannyasi that I knew many years ago. He actually gave up his vows. And he said one of the challenges was he was very lonely as a sannyasi. Of course, I was thinking, I don't think you need to be lonely as a sannyasi in this kind. We live very social lives we have, even if you're a sannyasi. I guess his loneliness was for a women's association, what it was really about. So anyway, the sannyasi is not supposed to be lonely. Just like Prabhupada himself, he was alone, but he never felt that he was alone. He always felt that his spiritual master was right there with him. So in today's verse, I wanted to read what the way Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur kind of summarizes what's going on here. So this is a person, maybe not necessarily Parikshit Maharaj, but someone is rejecting what Shukadeva is saying, because Shukadeva is saying, you know, get serious. Just get serious and dedicate yourself to spiritual life and don't worry about all these, you know, taking care of yourself, basically. So this is the way Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur puts it. He says, but how can I get rid of cold? I would say this is like, we might do so many excuses. You're supposed to do something and one excuse after the other. So this is a list of this person's, you know, mind is going, no, I can't do that, no. But how can I get rid of cold? Angry at such an objection, he speaks, is there not torn cloth lying on the road? How can I relieve my hunger? Do the trees which nourish others not give alms? Men should not give you anything. I have to find some water. What bad intelligence you have. Have the rivers gone dry? But I'll have to protect myself from tigers. Well, this is where the tigers are. I'll have to protect myself from tigers. Have the caves closed? But if I go to a cave, there may be tigers. Oh, I'm sorry, I skipped a line. But I'll have to protect myself from hail. A grass hut is necessary. Have the caves closed? But if I go to a cave, there may be tigers. Does not Vishnu protect his devotees? The Lord is in the heart of the tiger. Why will the Lord, affectionate to the devotee, send the tiger to attack the devotee? So this is how we're supposed to think. This prophet brings up a lot of nice points in his purport. One thing, it's interesting, when he was part of the theme, of course, in this purport is about being fearless. So a lot of times, if you listen to, especially if you listen to Prabhupada's lectures a lot of times you know where he's going. You know where he's coming, and a lot of times you can predict what he's going to say next, especially if you've studied verses, you know. Now he's going to quote this verse, and he does. And a lot of times you can see that. So I'm thinking, and it as I was looking at this, and Prabhupada's talking about fearlessness, and then you can see the point that Prabhupada makes, that this was in his mind, that he was thinking of this verse, the beginning of the 16th chapter of the Bhagavatam, Abhayam Tukhsamshuddhi, the Daivi Sampat, the characteristics of one who has the basically devotional qualifications, the qualification of a saintly person, the suras. So Prabhupada actually quotes this, Daivi Sampat, because it begins, Abhayam Sattvasam Shuti. The very first one on the list is Abhaya. Now, in Prabhupada's purport to this verse, of course, it make a lot of different points are made there. It's several verses. And in Prabhupada's purport, at least in the beginning of the purport, he talks about these different qualities in relationship to different ashrams. So Abhaya is the first one. He said this is about the sannyasi. Especially the sannyasi has to be fearless because he has to give up everything and just rely on God. Really, that's what the sannyasi does. You think he doesn't pack his backpack full of, you know, 6 months worth of supplies because he's taking off, leaving home. He goes out with nothing. Nothing, you know, just the clothes on his back, and maybe hardly even that. A gumsha and picking up the rest on the way and thinking somehow God is going to protect me. God is going to feed me. God is going to maintain me. So this is especially for the sannyasi. And samshuddhi means purification of his existence. So of course sannyasi is especially for that. But Prabhupada, he alludes to it here, where he says this is for everyone, actually. Because we don't think, well, only the sannyasi is supposed to be fearless, but everyone is supposed to. We are all supposed to be thinking this way, that Krishna will protect me. Krishna will maintain me. These are, of course, two of the six principles of Sharanagati, principles of surrender. Rakshishyatiti vishvaso gutpritte varanam tata. Krishna will... This is what, of course, a guardian does. A guardian protects and provides. Does those two things. So we see God in that way. He's our Father. So he'll naturally protect us from harm, physical harm especially, and also protect us by giving us food, support, nourishing us, giving us what we need to live in that way. So this is the, as Prabhupada is mentioning here, everyone should do this. He says at the end of the purport, everyone can become fearless and honest person if his very existence is purified by discharging the prescribed duty for each and every order of life. So here he's pointing out that this sattva samshuddhi is not only for the sannyasi, it's for everyone. Whatever ashram you're in, whatever your situation is in life, you act on that platform. This is an important principle that comes out. Krishna actually makes this point in the 11th canto when he's talking to Uddhava. And I hear it mentioned by the acharyas as I'm reading their different works. This point is made that we go gradually step by step as we progress in Krishna consciousness. And on at every step you're encouraged to don't always be thinking about what the next thing is, where you are, that you try to perfect that. Your station in life, your situation in life, you try to do that, how it's done, and then automatically you'll go up to the next step. You'll progress in that way. Of course, Rupa Goswami, this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, has given all the how we progress from one step to the other. I've been reading a Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, where the whole book is an elaboration on this, basically, giving details on the step-by-step from Shraddha all the way up to Prema. And there's a nice point I came across in one of the early verses in the book, where he says, you know, there are six things that happen but through devotional service. And the first two are Kleshagni and Shubhada. So Kleshagni means all the miseries go away, and Shubhada means Krishna consciousness or devotional service brings auspiciousness. So these first two are considered to be part of sadhana bhakti or vaidhi bhakti. And then the next two are bhava bhakti and the last two are prema bhakti. Of course, the one in bhava bhakti and prema bhakti, they include the lower two. So these first two, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a nice metaphor there. He says, first there is the seed, the bhakti lata, the seed of devotion, the bij of the bhakti lata. He says that's faith, or He says it, he describes it as the desire to do Krishna bhajan. That's the seed of the bhakti lata. When you get that desire, and that seed, that desire seed is planted by the guru or the sadhu. The pure devotee plants that seed within our heart, that desire. Of course, that's what a preacher does, tries to inspire us to engage or to inspire whoever the person comes across to take up Krishna consciousness. So that's the bhakti lata bija. And then, of course, that's there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagavanaji Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Bija. So then the next verse says, then when one gets that seed, then one waters it by hearing and chanting. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, by that watering process, then the first sprouts begin to appear. And he describes these sprouts as leaves, two leaves. He says it has two leaves. And a leaf, of course, has the top part, which is sometimes smooth and shiny, and the bottom part, which is sometimes a little rough, or the inside and the outside. So he says the top part, that's like the prema part. That's the sweet, soft, bhava, emotional side of devotional service, you might say. Raga, that's the raga side of the leaf. And the lower side, a little rough, that's the he actually calls it fear, to tie it into it, and it's about fear. So there's a kind of fear that's good. That's the fear of material existence, or even the fear of suffering in this world, that lower side, or it's fear of not following the scriptures. It's vaidhi bhakti, which is driven by fear in the sense of, I need to do the right thing, so I'll be successful in life. Sometimes I read about what the devotee's mentality is supposed to be, and I find it sometimes like, gee, I don't really think like that, so I guess I'm not a devotee. Like I was reading recently, I came across, I forget where it was, but the phrase was there, you know, the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee, I think it was. It says a devotee's whole point in life is to please Krishna. And I was thinking, I don't really think like that usually, that whatever I'm doing is to please Krishna. Usually I'm thinking what I'm doing is to save my skin. So this is, I was thinking, well, this is kind of supported by what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. It's like, that's all right in Vaidhi Bhakti. You could be motivated by fear of material existence. You could be motivated by not wanting to suffer anymore. I really think that that's what motivates me, is that I don't want to suffer anymore. I don't want to come back. And it seems like Prabhupada encouraged this kind of thinking, because how many thousands of times did he encourage us to go back to Godhead? And usually it was just, you know, this idea, it's almost like heaven, you know. Of course, we're all raised, many of us raised as Christians, so we had this idea we wanted to go to heaven and we would enjoy there. So maybe that, you know, that residual is in our mind that we're going to go to that place where we're going to be happy. And even, of course, Prabhupada would say that that's our right, because we're happy by nature. We're part of Krishna, who's always happy, who's always blissful. So this is, and how does that come, of course? That comes by sattva samshuddhi, by the practices of Krishna consciousness. Now what happens, of course, is that, you know, we're motivated in the beginning by that. Now one reason, of course, this Vaidhi Bhakti is called the rough side of the leaf. Belief is also because it's considered to be very slow and not so effective. In the Bhakti Sandarbha, of course it has it, you know, it does get us there. But towards the end of the Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami, he talks about this. He talks, most of the book is about, there's like 330 anuchedas, something like that. And most of the book, almost up to 300, is about Vaidhi Bhakti. Well, in the beginning he just glorifies and explains why bhakti is so important. Then he talks a lot about Vaidhi Bhakti, sadhana bhakti, Vaidhi Bhakti. And of course, sadhana bhakti has two parts, which is Vaidhi Bhakti, which means, as I was saying, fearful that I have to follow the rules, I have to do these things, so I'll make spiritual advancement. And then raga, that's the second part of sadhana bhakti. So that's when the feeling arises, when you really, you don't need anyone to tell you. You don't need this enticement that the suffering is going to stop. You're really not suffering anymore. You're just thinking how attractive Krishna is, how beautiful Krishna is. I want to please Krishna. That's all. That's all there is to it. I often think how sometimes, especially devotees are getting older these days, and there's talk about raga nuga bhakti. There are devotees who insist that, you know, we really should start doing some of these practices of raga nuga bhakti. There's even something I came across recently. I'm not sure where it is, but one of our acharyas, maybe more than one of them, there's something called what's the word now? I can't think of the Sanskrit. Basically what it means is that you can start practicing raga nuga bhakti before you're actually on that stage where your heart has melted, you might say, and you're fully attracted to Krishna. You can start doing, I think it's something like aruchi, or what is it? Guna radhi? Yeah, there's a different phrase. It has something. Basically, the word, I'm trying to fit the Sanskrit, but the word is no taste raga. Basically, is that before you have the taste, you can start practicing. You know, that's there. So anyway, sometimes I think, but we have to be really careful about what our motivation is, because am I thinking? In fact, we may, you know, now at this stage of life, may sometimes think, well, you know, would I rather be a gopi or would I rather be a cowherd boy? So. And you know, people, sometimes, you know, devotees say, even young devotees, in fact, maybe there's a tendency there for very new devotees to start thinking about these things. So I always think, where is that coming from? Is it because I think it would be more fun to be a cowherd boy? That's not the right motivation. And that I would have more fun being a cowherd boy. Being a cowherd girl, I don't know, that somehow that doesn't appeal to me. But that's not what it's about. If you want to be a cowherd boy, it should be, oh, Krishna wants cowherd boys to play with. I'd like to do that service. That would be a nice service to Krishna. That's what it's about. That's what we're supposed to be progressing toward. Only the desire to serve Krishna. When I read, the Krishna's pastimes, a lot of times it seems like, my point is, that's what everyone in Vrindavan is thinking. How can I serve Krishna? But it doesn't seem like that necessarily to us. It seems like they're thinking, let's go out and have fun. Come on, let's go out. All the cowherd boys are running out to the pasture, thinking how they're going to have so much fun. But actually, deep in their heart, it's all about, how can I please Krishna? How can I make Krishna happy? And the gopis also, you think the gopis, they're just so mad after Krishna. Sometimes I think, do they ever relax? Does Radharani ever relax? If you read some of the leelas, it's so intense. She's always, it seems like she's always suffering. That's what it seems like. That's our picture of the spiritual world. Everyone is suffering there in separation. When Gopakumara goes back to Godhead, he sees people are like, can't fear. He said, there's one of the verses in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He says, I couldn't tell if everyone was in ecstasy or they were just dying suffering. I couldn't really figure it out. Of course, that's true. We can't figure it out. We think we can. We know something about God, but what do we know really about it? The spiritual world or the heart of the pure devotee or that world where everything exists. It's the realm of consciousness, which is so foreign to us. What do we know? Matter. We know our minds, our bodies, and so on. So that's a whole different thing. So anyway, I think this point is very important. It's something that we have to remember, that it's about serving Krishna. That has to, not how we're going to have fun with Krishna. Even though, you know, from our perspective, even when we hear from the liberated souls, it seems like, even Prabhupada in his arrival prayer, when he said, you know, he's looking forward. I had this thought today, it came to me, that when will I be able to run with you in the pastures of Braja and so on? You think, oh, Prabhupada just wants to enjoy with Krishna. But what is he doing? He's coming to America by himself. I was just thinking of this journey that Prabhupada took on his boat. What is it, 32 days or 30-some days at sea? Oh, what? That's a horrible thing, traveling by sea. Just to be on a boat in one place for 30-some days. Then it's, you know, he got seasick because, you know, boats, they sometimes tilt. What is it called? I forget what the term is. But you're going, my brother was a sailor. He was in the Navy. And we had a picture of him one time. It was like, you know, 45 degree angle because he was on the ship, and sometimes it can go for hours and hours like that. So it's like the gravitational pull is completely opposite of what you're used to. You're used to it coming, you know, perpendicular to your body, but now it's coming at you at 45 degrees, so it's very uncomfortable. And of course, the rough seas and so on. So we may think, oh, Prabhupada's just thinking about enjoying with Krishna, but no, he's coming to serve Krishna. He's coming to serve. In fact, he's coming to serve his spiritual master. That was his thought. He was ready to do anything. And fearless. Of course, that Prabhupada is also the definition of fearlessness. People said, you're just going to die, old man. That's what Sumati Maharaji told him. Old man, you will die there. He said, Prabhupada said, well, this is I have to do this. I have to do this. My Guru Maharaj told me to do this. How can I not do it? So he was so fearless, coming to New York City. And so his thought was not happiness. His thought was service. This is my duty. This is my position. So here, this verse today is really in the context of the sannyasis especially, are supposed to be this high level of thinking. But of course, in our Krishna consciousness movement, and Prabhupada trained us, from the beginning we start thinking about these things. What is the ideal? We're so fortunate Prabhupada showed us right away what the ideal is, because most people don't know. Nobody knows, really, what the ideal situation in life. I always think of that way. And we compare Krishna consciousness to other religions. First of all, the fullness of our understanding of God, it's so far beyond. Really, I've heard this point made. They know God, they may know God in other religions, but they only know the Purushas. They don't know Bhagavan. They don't know anything about Bhagavan. They know the Purushas. They know the Vishnus. They know the Creator. Even you could say lower, they know Brahma. They know something about that aspect of God, but what do they know about his private life? They don't know anything. So they don't know Bhagavan. So we have all these things. We're so fortunate that we have so much knowledge given to us by the Bhagavatam and our acharyas and Srila Prabhupada. So I'll stop here. I was just noticing this book was printed in India and they did break up the paragraphs. This was two full pages, all one paragraph. And what I was reading, preparing for this class, there were several paragraphs. It threw me off because I was kind of using the paragraphs as signposts to give my class, but I can't see them here. Anyway, any questions or comments? Or? Maybe it's a jata ruchi. Yeah, before the ruchi is born, one can still perform. A jata ruchi, right? Yeah, there's jata ruti and ajata ruti. But even in ajata ruti, there's some allowance for starting some raganuga practices. Of course, the thing about raganuga is it's all internal. You don't show it outside. You do like everybody else. Thirikram Prabhu.
The Vayu Puran says that in Satya, nectar would flow up from the earth. And the living entities, or especially the humans, would be sustained by that. And then it went on to say that in Treta Yuga, there were Kalpa Vriksha trees. Trees, wish-fulfilling trees that produce any kind of thing for the humans again. And then in Dwarpa Yuga, fruit trees used to bear in profusion. So it seems like the other ages, there were always so much things being supplied to everyone. Really. So for the sannyasi, it was easy.
Yeah, like everything is bad in Kali Yuga.
And then also it stated that the living entities used to live in caves in the other ages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, like that. And it's interesting. But what's interesting too, because the scientists used to speak about cavemen, because they actually discovered that people used to live in the caves already, you know. So you know, that is in accordance with the scripture.
Yeah, we believe in cavemen too, but they're different. They're sadhus.
Thank you, Prabhu. It's nice to hear you giving class again.
Thank you.
Two things. One, you had mentioned in the beginning that it's difficult to meditate on the supersoul within. So Sukadeva Goswami recommends this meditation on the Virat Rupa because it's purifying. I think you said something else. If we just think when we see the material nature and we think of Krishna, it's purifying. Because it is Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are not aware of the description of the Virat Rupa, but, you know, hug trees and go to the springs, you know, or whatever, and they love nature and sunset like that, are they getting purified? Because this is the Virat Rupa.
Well, it's better than living in the concrete jungle. No, it's said that the forest is the mode of goodness. So in that sense, sometimes purification is also described as elevation in the modes of nature.
Oh, okay.
So to go from rajas and tamas up to sattva, there's some benefit from that.
That's
and sattva
true.
Is also considered to be a good platform to, you know, progress farther, to actually go on to the platform of spiritual life.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it's helpful. Like the example that's given of the spark, if the spark goes into a, you know, a dry field of grass, and it's going to ignite a big fire quickly. So that's the benefit of sattva guna.
Mm-hmm.
So you have people who live simple lives and closer to nature. There's some benefit to that.
Yeah. Also, you had mentioned how an acquaintance of yours said he gave up the vows of sannyas because of loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading a devotee was commenting on this phenomena of sannyasis falling down. And one strong point was made that because they have not developed strong relationships with their peers, who are of equal circle of influence. Therefore, they're simply what they were worshipped, so to speak, by younger, you know.
Yeah, that was definitely been a phenomenon in our movement. Yeah. It's a very difficult position, actually, to be a guru, and everyone worshipping you, and so especially if your association is only with your disciples and not with your god brothers, then it's dangerous. So you have to have those kinds of friendships. There's no need to be lonely if you to take advantage of association of your peers.
Right. It was such a nice class, thank you. When you were speaking about caves, I thought there's actually a devotee who lives in Mayapur half the year, and in the West the other half for at least 10 years now. He's done a whole study guide on Chaitanya Charitamrita. But in Kentucky, he's made a home in a cave. So now we also have those. But more, the point of fearlessness. Just yesterday, I had ordered, and it came, a book I ordered on Amazon. Our devotee from Gitanagari, Bali Maharaj, who left his body not long ago, they had a Zoom memorial for him, who's a disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami. And I read almost the whole book last night, and one of Bali's qualities that people kept referring to was his fearlessness. He had driven an ice cream truck in D.C. before he moved to Gitanagari. And one time Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was riding with him, and he said, "What's that hole in the windshield?" "Oh, that's a bullet hole." And several people told it. So when he told about the person that tried to rob him getting angry and shooting, he was so undisturbed by the whole, "Well, if Krishna wants me to die," you know, like that. And then another quality that probably has something to do with his... Oh, there was another fearlessness when he went to Ekavira to visit someone who had a very mean dog, and the dog came running, barking, barking, barking. And as soon as he got to Bali just like, "Oh, hard." You know, he just started wagging his tail, and he could sense this person is saintly. And another thing that many people said about this devotee was that they never, in 30 years, ever heard him criticize another devotee or complain. So.
Nice. I was just reading where, I forget what it was, because I read so many different things. Oh, I know what it was. I've been reading Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Vani Vaibhav, Bhaktivinoda Vani Vaibhav, the collection of his teachings, a couple of volumes. And there he makes the point that to be a Vaishnava, you have to become a Brahmana first. You have to have the Brahminical qualities, not necessarily a Brahmin caste, but just like these qualities that we read about of the Brahmana, truthfulness and self-control and all of these things. Which generally the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas necessarily don't have. But to be a Vaishnava, you have to develop those Brahminical qualities. So we see that in devotees. They may not have the nature necessarily. They may be more, you know, inclined to manual labor or something like that. You might see their Shudras. But you see they have Brahminical qualities. They become nice Vaishnavas. Yeah. Prabhupada wanted that, of course. He said he was trying to create Brahmins. What did he mean by that? He meant Brahmin Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas with Brahmin qualities. Brahmin with Vinayaprabhu?
We have, in our ISKCON Sannyas ministry, we have many topics, but one of the beginning topics, trying to turn it on, and one of the beginning topics is that verse that you quoted, but they add one more word.
You mean Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi?
Abhayam Sattva Samshuddhi Gyana Yoga Vyavasthi. Three things they must do. I remember when I applied 5 years back, and my Sannyas GVC was special group, very mercifully, told a very nice time. So these are like compulsory, and they explain the whole.
But Gyana Yoga there means Gyana and Yoga? knowledge and Prabhupada translates it as cultivation of spiritual knowledge. For Jnana Yoga Vyavasthiti.
Yeah.
Cultivation of spiritual knowledge. So you have fearfulness, purification of one's existence, and cultivation of spiritual knowledge. Those are the first ones. So you're saying that it was emphasized that these are especially for sannyasis. They must,
yeah. We have like a 17 verses we have to like every day follow. And it's very illuminating. In the beginning I felt pressure. I felt like, but it's most satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
This whole ministry setup is so wonderful. Another point you made a very nice, you made a very, very wonderful many points. One point you made about giving pleasure to Krishna versus I'm drawing pleasure for myself in relation to Krishna. I'm just wording my way of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But you made it one thing very clear that what is the main requirement, that to please Krishna. So then I was thinking, Sanatana Goswami Pad expressed that without satcha, in the beginning of our pure goodness contact, there's a three division. One is suddha, satcha, and santa. Before dasya, before you go further relationship, beginning the satcha, transparent. So he brings the reference of Sanatana Goswami that how he saw this Pulinda girl so much in love with Krishna and coward boys wrestling and giving pleasure to Krishna, and she is praying to the Lord, can I become a boy so I can give him pleasure? Please, oh God, make me a boy. And next day she saw this lady kind of disciplining, wiping his sweats from the, oh God, can I become a lady and I do this to him? Like, and then of course went on and on, and then at the end that Krishna entered into a forest group and she said, I'm going to just do to please her. And she jumped in and found herself in front of Srimati Radharani and all the Manjuris. And Radharani accepted her as one of the Manjuris. So it's very fascinating, like this transparent to please Krishna. Any relationship is the foundation. From that episode, what I understood. It's so nice. Thank you for hitting that.
Of course, the devotees have their own heart, like I was saying. Someone will think, I want to please Krishna this way, and someone will think, I want to please Krishna that way. And that's, you hear, if you read it in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita about when Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha, it's really amazing description, actually. So people do all that. I mean, some people become plants to please Krishna. They become animals to please Krishna. They take different forms. The Kumaras, they take on the form, they change their forms. It's all about pleasing Krishna. So that's it. You can do different things. It's not that there's no freedom, you might say, in pleasing Krishna. You can do it according to your own inspiration, your own heart.
Yeah, it's very dynamic. Jagdita Maharaj was telling me once that there was a painting of Krishna Vrindavan in Gopakumar's experience in the closet. And so he said, he asked Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrother, how is that they have a Krishna conception but they keep that in a closet? He said, oh no, no, because you don't want to think God as a coward boy. He's a worshipable object, not a coward.
Yeah.
So it's like a very funny, fascinating, it's like very dynamic. The whole spiritual world is very dynamic, so attractive. Just to think that. It never ends, it like goes on, new.
Krishna accommodates so many things. All right, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada.